Councilors versus Cunningham. Ms. King.
Judge Posner, Judge Cudahy, Judge Easterbrook, may it please the court. My name is Helen Kim. I represent Carl Cunningham. In February of 2005, approximately 1 month after Booker was issued, the district court sentenced Mr. Cunningham to 57 months in the Bureau of Prisons and 5 years of supervised release based on his participation in a drug conspiracy that involved crack cocaine. The sentence imposed in this case was unreasonable. It was unreasonable because the district court failed to provide an adequate, sufficient statement of reasons when it sentenced Mr. Cunningham, as required by Booker, by the statute 3553C, by Circuit Rule 50 from this circuit, as well as by Dean. In this case, Mr. Cunningham made many arguments that were supported, that were based on evidence, in order to draw the district court's attention to relevant factors to 3553A, to ask for a sentence different than one in the guidelines. Specifically, to name the top three, he argued that he was not the ordinary drug defendant to come before the district court, not only because of his personal characteristics, which included no criminal history, a marriage of 16 years, being a Vietnam vet, being a post office worker for 24 years, but to show that he had a low risk of recidivism and to put everything in context of the offense. Mr. Cunningham also argued that his specific psychiatric condition, being panic attack with agoraphobia, where he was unable to leave his house, where counselors who were working with him were trying to get him to leave, would not be properly treated in the Bureau of Prisons, that medication alone was insufficient. Mr. Cunningham argued, ultimately, that the guidelines calculation was unfair because he was being treated as if he was at the same culpability as Andre Means, his co-defendant. He was being held to the full amount of cocaine that was being distributed.
Why did he decide not to, according to the judge, he decided not to cooperate against Means? What was that about?
Well, I guess to answer your question, that's part of the problem with the record that was made. The district court did reference to this lack of cooperation, and it was based on the fact that when the argument started at sentencing, the government made some reference. The argument was trying to be, it started by saying that in mitigation, Mr. Cunningham has come forward, has cooperated with the safety valve proffer. We have no disagreement with him qualifying for that or acceptance. However, and they added this new concept, he could have come in and cooperated against his co-defendant and chose not to. It was surprising to me that the district court ended up referencing to that as one of
Well, I don't understand what that means. If the government is satisfied, I don't understand.
That's exactly
right. Did the government explain what he had failed to do, what they wanted him to do?
I think that is part of the problem in this case, is that the district court ended up making.
Now, my question is different. Did the government explain? It says in litigation, Cunningham came in and did the proffer. The government takes and believes that the sentence did not come forward to cooperate when he could have against the co-defendant and come in earlier. The case ultimately ended up in plea. He did ask him to come in earlier, and the decision was made not to do that. Right? So I guess the government wanted some cooperation that Cunningham did What was Means' sentence?
Ultimately, Andre Means was sentenced to 188 months, but he was a career offender.
Mm-hmm.
And did not incur until much later. But just to touch again on the cooperation issue, the government made that sort of statement, but the problem is that that's not factually correct. The government said that Mr. Cunningham...
Did you represent him?
I did represent him.
Well, did you take issue in this sentencing hearing with what the government had said?
I did not take issue with it, frankly, because it came up at that time for the first time, and I didn't think that the court would be using that as a factor to rely on, and I don't think that it's a factor tied to 3553A in any regard.
With Cunningham being kept behind the theme of marijuana by Means in connection with these transactions?
Did we get
free marijuana from Means in connection with these transactions?
He did not get anything from Andre Means. He didn't get any sort of bargains. He didn't get any sort of profits. There was no evidence.
Well, I thought the confidential informant gave him $10 to $20 on eight of the nine occasions.
That was the connection. Was Andre Means was Mr. Cunningham's marijuana supplier, but Mr. Cunningham continued to pay Andre Means the same amount that he
did.
Did not get any discount based on anything that had to do with this offense. He didn't get any profits at all, which was part of the argument that we were making, that he and Andre Means are essentially starting out according to the guidelines, which properly should be used as a starting point. But from there, clearly there were relevant, important factors that showed why that sentence would not be reasonable. The problem here is that the court, when it made its statement for the record, it was not adequate even by the requirements I submit of Dean, of course, in addition to the statute and Booker that says that these considerations have to be tied to 3553A. If the court is making ultimately a record...
Counsel, this kind of puzzles me. The guidelines themselves implement the statutory criteria. That was what the Sentencing Commission was charged with doing. I don't understand why, when a judge calculates a guideline sentence, he has not necessarily taken all of the statutory criteria into account.
I would submit because the guidelines is only one factor that's listed under 3553A, and certainly...
The guidelines aren't a factor. The guidelines are the Sentencing Commission's effort to implement the statutory criteria. Now, one can imagine a claim that the Sentencing Commission didn't do that very well, or that one of them really ought to outweigh something else here. But I'm just puzzled by the thought that a judge who has fully calculated a guideline sentence has somehow not taken any statutory criteria into account.
That's not my argument here. What I'm saying, however, is that when Mr. Cunningham raised specific arguments that were tied not only to the statute, but ultimately that were based on a request for a lower sentence than a guideline range, there needed to be some statement, some address by the court in order to just meet fundamental process, in order to show the logic of the court, in order to show that when the court was considering rejecting...
That sounds like the argument that was rejected in Dean, though, that the judge has to separately consider each of the statutory factors even after he's calculated the guideline sentence. And I understand Dean is saying it's enough for the judge to say, I've considered your arguments, but he doesn't have to discuss them one by one. You're saying he has to discuss them one by one.
No, I'm not arguing that.
But if he doesn't have to discuss them one by one, and he says he's considered them, which he plainly did here, what's the middle ground?
I suppose the middle ground, well, to be more accurate, the ground in this case would be that when Mr. Cunningham raised specific arguments, they should have been addressed. That certainly would have been...
Well, that's your argument, that the judge had to address each of the defendant's arguments one by one.
But that is, that's separate.
That's what Dean rejected.
But that's, I take Dean to mean that it's rejecting that some, the court has to go through some exercise of addressing just on its own every factor. And I agree that with Dean's conclusion that that's not necessary. I see that my time is up.
May I just... Okay. Thank you, Ms. Carroll. Mr. Drew?
May it please the court. As set forth in the defendant's reply brief, the government's argument is quite simple in this case. Judge Castillo, an experienced district court judge, imposed a sentence within the appropriate guidelines range. During the hearing, Judge Castillo explicitly stated that in imposing that sentence, he considered the factors in 18 United States Code Section 3553A. Further, in imposing the sentence, Judge Castillo provided reasons...
Well, I don't understand why it matters that Judge Castillo is an experienced district judge. Are you arguing that if a newly-appointed district judge did the same thing, we should reverse?
I'm not, Your Honor. I'm just...
No, then it doesn't matter that Judge Castillo has been on the bench for X years and was vice president of the Sentencing Commission and all of that.
Very well, Your Honor. In making the argument, we're simply pointing out that Judge Castillo was familiar with sentencing. He has the experience of looking at it, but obviously a brand new judge.
You just now said it doesn't matter.
But a brand new judge would make the same argument for a new judge, Your Honor. You're correct.
What I'm troubled by is, he says, looking at you, I mean, sometimes the less said is the better. He says, looking at you, knowing that you're not all bad, whatever that means, knowing that you make tremendous mistakes in this case to get into office a number of times, and I'll tell you quite honestly, I've done this once or twice, I would rethink using my sentencing discretion at 9 different times, the fact that you, out of loyalty, I think misguided, etc., decided not to cooperate. What is curious about this is that the main argument that Ms. Kim made for him is that he has serious psychiatric problems, and the judge didn't mention that.
The judge did state that he considered the factors in 3553A, which takes into account the history.
Yeah, it's not enough to say the factors. That's just saying, yes, I looked at the factors, but... And I look at the factors, I neglected to consider whether one of these factors, and the characteristics, the history and characteristics of the defendant, were atypical in this case.
There's nothing in the record that shows that Judge Castillo did not consider that he didn't.
Well, I don't understand. She gets up and she explains, you know, this problem is depression and this and that and the other. And then the judge doesn't mention that. He mentions some other things, but doesn't mention that. Doesn't seem as if he's giving any real... I mean, presumably, what is left after Booker is that the judge, when he looks at these sentencing factors, 3553A, he doesn't have to discuss them, and he doesn't have, as Judge Easterbrook said, he doesn't have to discuss all the defendant's arguments. But if the defendant makes a salient argument that has at least colorable merit, and the judge doesn't mention that at all, but discusses other things, it shakes my confidence that he gave real consideration to his discretionary authority, created by Booker.
In response to that, Your Honor, the record makes clear that he said a few separate times that he understood he had the discretion, that he was utilizing his discretion. Judge Castillo stated that based on the 9 separate transactions...
Well, that was the decisive factor with him, was it not? It happened 9 times.
It sounds like that was an important factor, Your Honor. I do not know if that was the decisive factor, if it was all the factors combined, that he did this while he was on duty as a postal worker, that he did it while he was in uniform, that he was a drug user, that he was using drugs while on probation, taking all those characteristics into account. But he did mention that there were the nine separate times, and he may have reconsidered it if it was...
Well, the issue is to say that there hadn't nine times I had done something different, isn't it? As the judge said
that, Your Honor.
Hmm?
He did say that on the record, that if it had happened two or three times, he may have used his discretion, but because it was nine, he didn't see it necessary to use his discretion. What the record makes clear is that he understood he had the discretion. He was advised by the government to make sure that he understood that, and he then reiterated, I understand I have the discretion and I'm not utilizing it here. The sentence he imposed was within the guidelines range. This court has held that that sentence is presumptively reasonable. The defendant is not even arguing or attempting to rebut the presumption. Essentially what the defendant is saying is that the presumption shouldn't apply, or that this court's decisions in Dean and George and McKidiak somehow were wrong. But it's the government's position that this court got it right, and because there's a rebuttable presumption that the sentence is reasonable, and because the defendant has not rebutted that presumption, that this court should affirm.
Well, he thought, I mean, she thought she had rebutted it with all this evidence of psychiatric problems, which the judge didn't discuss.
Your Honor,
do you think a judge can, do you think no matter what the, kind of presentation is made at the sentencing hearings, the judge can just say, well, I'm just giving a guideline sentence. I've looked at the sentencing statutory factors, and that's it, so leave me alone.
Your Honor, I think consistent with this court's holdings in Dean and George, if they calculate, if a judge, any judge, calculates a sentence within the guidelines range, there's going to be a presumption that it's adequate.
Well, no, it's presumption. The question is, can that presumption be rebutted by saying, well, look, I presented all this evidence to judges, he didn't mention it, may not have noticed it, he really ought to do more. At least address my good arguments, not my bad arguments, good arguments.
Well, the judge here, in this specific case, the judge did...
No, he didn't mention the main point she made about his psychiatric problems.
And
how is that responsive?
Because the judge considered all, well, because he didn't rotely go through all the points she raised, he did say that...
But anyway, so when someone discusses some points and not others, you could say, well, the reason he didn't discuss the other arguments was that they were trivial or weak, so on. But her argument about the psychiatric problems of her client, that's the core of her presentation.
And, Your Honor,
and he ignores it. So you wonder whether he just, you know, slipped the card and forgot that's what she just said.
Your Honor, if that's what happened, there was an opportunity at the end. Judge Castillo, I believe, did ask, is there anything else? And counsel for the defendant didn't say, Judge, you did not mention my primary argument here. Did you take that into consideration? They could have done that. They could have asked Judge Castillo, have you considered this?
Where did the judge say that?
I believe at the end he asked if there was anything else, and that's... I know on Appendix A14 that he again addressed Ms. Kim about asking if what facility he wanted to recommend. He didn't ask if there was anything else.
That's very, very different, right?
And if he didn't say that, I apologize. But Ms. Kim was there. She did have the opportunity to raise that attention, similar to an objection at a trial, to give the judge the opportunity.
Well, no, really. What is that, now impose a requirement of, like a motion for reconsideration or something?
It sounds like that would be a requirement that the defendant take an exception. Of course, the rules of criminal procedure expressly say that exceptions to judicial rulings are never necessary. You make your arguments, the judge rules, and that's that. You never have to say, Your Honor, I disagree, or Your Honor, I want you to reconsider. That's the whole purpose of the criminal rule.
That's correct, Your Honor. And here, whether exception was taken or not, the fact is that Ms. Kim was there. The argument could...
So you're arguing with Judge Easterbrook?
I'm not arguing with it. I know not to do that, Your Honor.
Well, you just said without... She was there, she should have taken exception. That's what you just said.
The point the government is making is that Judge Castillo was there. He put on the record that he considered all the factors. Now, he didn't explicitly talk about...
So your suggestion is that the judge who wants to keep out of trouble, what he says is, I'm giving you the guideline sentence. I've considered the statutory factors, period. So we can have a little form for the judge. The judge, you know, they have this low standard of review that they like to put. So this would be, you know, a little printed form. Says your guideline sentence is X. I have considered the statutory factors. I impose the guideline sentence. Three sentences, printed form, signature of the judge. That's it.
Whether or not they prepare that form, that type.
That's fine, but that would be, you know, not. But if they did that, that would be fine. You would consider that compliance with Booker.
Whether I consider that or not.
No, I'm asking you, would you consider that compliance with Booker?
It seems based on the decision.
Answer me straight. Would you consider that compliance with Booker? You, Mr. Drury, would you consider that compliance with Booker?
Based on the decision.
Not based on. Just tell me yes or no.
Yes, Your Honor, I would.
Yes, okay, thank you.
And for the reasons that we've stated, I see my time is up. The government respectfully requests that the sentence below be affirmed.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Drew. So, Ms. Kim, your time expired, but if you want to hand it, if you have anything further.
The only point I want to reiterate is that the basis to review the decision by the district court is really what this case is about. The statement of reasons given by the court, rather than making the litigants, making this court have to speculate as to what factors or what the decision was of the lower court, is exactly the problem here. Because of the manner that the sentence was imposed, because of the statements that were inadequate on the record, the sentence was unreasonable. Therefore, we're asking for the sentence to be vacated, the case remanded for a new sentencing.
Okay, well, thank you. So, last case.